if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
We use underwater robotics to get students interested in science, technology, engineering, and math. It's about thinking creatively and being able to problem solve.
What if you had to design a robot that was going to carry out a series of specific tasks underwater? That's the challenge Jill Zandi and her team present to students annually. Jill is the Associate Director of the Marine Advanced Technology Education Center, or MATE Center, and she has been with them since the early days of this organization, implementing their underwater robotics competition in 2002. Their goal? To teach students engineering and technology skills in ways that will prepare them for future careers, including careers in the arts. And now, Jill is also the president of new nonprofit MATE Inspiration for Innovation, which inspires students to creatively apply STEAM skills, or skills in science, technology, engineering, art, and math, to solving real-world problems. Jill, before we get started talking about the Marine Advanced Technology Education Center and that incredible underwater robotics competition, let's talk a little bit about your background. How did you first get interested in oceanography, and how did robotics come into the picture?
Oh, that is a great question. So I grew up in northwestern Pennsylvania, actually really far from the ocean, but not too far from Lake Erie. And it was really my parents and visiting places like SeaWorld, you know, take it for what is at this point. I know there's pros and cons to places like that these days, but really it was taking family vacations and visiting underwater parks like that that got me to fall in love with the ocean and marine biology in particular. And so I went to Penn State, and believe it or not, Penn State actually has a minor. They offer a minor in marine science. And so it was during my senior year there that I met a professor who had just come to Penn State from the University of California, Santa Barbara. He did work on deep sea creatures, looking at basically the symbiotic relationships between bacteria and some deep sea creatures. And so I worked in his lab during my senior year and just really appreciated and got really interested in the projects that he was doing. And so after graduating from Penn State, I actually went to Louisiana State University and worked on my master's with a colleague of my professor at Penn State. So I was doing similar work. I did research on hydrocarbon seeps in the Gulf of Mexico, focusing on the biology of those seeps, and used submersibles in my work, not underwater robots, well, a type of underwater robot, right, one you can actually sit in. And so I was in the Alvin submersible and the Johnson C. Link submersible, which was operational at the time, and got my master's. And my first job was as a research associate at the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and that's Dauphine, the French prince, and not the marine mammal. That's a sea lab that's located on Dolphin Island, which is off the coast of Mobile, Alabama. So I ran a research lab there and came way inshore, left the deep sea, and really focused on seagrass beds and seagrass ecology. And it was during my time there, I appreciated what I was doing, and I appreciated the research, but for me, in my career path, what I could see in front of me, the only thing I could see in front of me really at the time, was to get a PhD, to have a lab, to have graduate students, and to go that academic route. And I just knew that wasn't really what I wanted to do. And so I started to look into education. And Dolphin Island Sea Lab has a great education program there. They do a lot of things, not only, you know, within the universities that are part of the Sea Lab, but they have, you know, a discovery center, they've got programs, they've got a really great education arm. And so it was at that time that, you know, I was sort of exploring this other career option for me, that my former major professor from Louisiana State University told me about the MATE Center, the Marine Advanced Technology Education Center. He had just come back from a meeting with a group of people who were starting to form this center, and really something that was focused on as the name implies, marine technology education, but really focusing on giving students the hands-on skills, you know, the practical, showing them the practical applications of their academic or book learning. And I realized at the time that was very appealing to me because I felt like that was something that I had missed in my education. And so I got in touch with folks at the MATE Center. They were just getting started, just got funding from the National Science Foundation, and were looking for some people. And I applied and got the position and made my way out to California. So that was sort of a long-winded, we could be interviewing for a long time, Doc, because I have a lot of, I can speak for a while as well. So that was my circuitous route, if you will, from Pennsylvania to the Gulf Coast and finally out to California working for the MATE Center.
Sounds like you'd already had the start of a career that where you'd love every minute. What were the early days like? Take me back in your imagination, please, to the MATE Center, and what was one of your very first days there like?
Oh, you know what? It was so interesting to me because I was very excited to come to Monterey. You know, between the Monterey Bay Aquarium, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, Hopkins Marine Lab, which is part of Stanford University. I mean, Monterey Bay is really a mecca for ocean science and technology. And so I was thrilled to be in the area. And at the MATE Center, you know, the center was founded in 1997. I came in 1998. So we were still really figuring out who we are and what we wanted to do. The backbone of the MATE Center is really our workforce studies and looking at the ocean workforce and looking at what jobs are there now, what jobs could be there in the future, what skills students need. So we were really doing a lot of research and a lot of exploring. So it was really fascinating because there wasn't a script for my job, if you will, right? It evolved into what it is now. And it was really back in, late 1999, early 2000, the Marine Technology Society, and I should mention it's Marine Technology Society, they're really a partner with us on this program, on the underwater robotics competition. They're just a wonderful umbrella organization. They represent marine professionals from engineers to scientists to government workers to educators. It's really a great umbrella organization and very supportive of students. Well, they have what's called an ROV committee, a remotely operated vehicle committee. And that committee came to us and said, you know what, we would like to work with you, MATE Center, to develop a program that helps students develop the skills that our industry is looking for. And they said, you know, at the time, there were tons of jobs out there in ROV technology, and they were getting few applicants, and those that were applying just didn't have the skills and the experience they needed. And the other thing they brought to us was the fact that, you know, they really needed a way to better connect with students. They gave the example that they had the Marine Technology Society and the ROV committee have a ton of scholarship money available for students. And at the time, no one was applying for these ROV committee scholarships. So they knew they were missing connecting with students. So they really wanted to work with us to develop that program, help make students aware. And of course, we were thrilled that this professional society was coming to us and wanting to work with us. We saw it as a way to really help expose our students to all the career opportunities that were out there. And also, if you will, you know, have the members and the organizations that were part of this society put their money where their mouth is. If they need skilled individuals to fill their workplace needs, then they really should help by contributing to educational programs. And so we welcome the opportunity to work with them. And more than just financial contributions, Dot, it's really about, you know, the professionals that work in those industries. I mean, they have so much to share that they can share to help students learn. You know, in the classroom, classroom learning is great. And for teachers and students, eventually, you know, their learning is, it reaches a place where you really need someone who's out there doing the job in the industry to come in and share their knowledge and skills and really complement what the students are learning and help them to go to the next step. So we were thrilled to work with the ROV committee, and we really just sat down and kind of like scribbling on napkins trying to figure out what would this program look like. And someone suggested, hey, why don't we do a robotics competition, an underwater robotics or ROV, remotely operated vehicle competition. And I said, I would love to to work on that. You know, I had used submersibles, not underwater robots, in my work, but I really had an appreciation for the technology. It was really something interesting. It was a project that I really wanted the challenge to take on. And so in the early days, you know, it was really about going out and looking at other robotics competitions to see how they were run, how they were structured, you know, what elements did they have, right? There's the robot, but if you want to really develop a well-rounded individual, it's more than just the technical skills. It's more than just the robot. It's about communicating. It's about written communication and oral communication. It's about project management. It's about managing a budget. It's about, you know, working with people. And so really thinking about all of those and trying to put all those elements into a program that would really be appealing to students. And really something that they would be excited to work on, you know, would get them excited about this and really get them motivated to become involved.
I'm sitting here thinking, why in the world didn't they have these in my student days? This just sounds incredible. I love that you have the skills that are going to stand these students in good stead, whether they go on and do underwater robotics or if they go into business or whatever, entrepreneurial skills.
Right, right.
What was that first robotics competition like?
Well, I want to touch upon something that you said. We really, you know, for us, it's about, we use underwater robotics to get students interested in science, technology, engineering, and math. You know, the skills that they're learning, we really want them to develop the transferable skills. As you mentioned, they could be used in underwater robotics. They can be used in land robotics. We have competition alumni who work for General Motors, Ford Motor Company. And it's really, you know, more than those technical skills, it's about thinking creatively and being able to problem solve and being resourceful and being entrepreneurial. You know, that's one of the things we really stress with our competition. It's a really that creativity, that innovation, that entrepreneurial focus. You know, we challenge the students. We say, okay, you're not a team. You need to transfer your team into a company. Think of yourself as a student-run company. And what do you need to run this company? Yes, there's the R&D and there's all the technical side, but you need someone to handle the finance. You need someone to be the project manager or the CEO, you know, and again, the CFO handling the budget. You need someone to do your marketing, right? I mean, it's one thing to develop a product, but if you can't get the word out about it and convince people that it's worthwhile, what good is it? And so we really started to stress this entrepreneurial focus and this thinking like a company. And it's probably been about 6 years at this point. And we really wanted to give students, you know, understanding of the breadth of business operations and to really get them thinking about, you know, it is a team. You're part of a team. And what value do you bring to this company, right? Nobody in this day and age, no one sits in their little cubicle without interacting and without, you know, really contributing to a bigger picture. And that's something that we really wanted the students to see. And I will tell you, Dot, these students, you'll have to come next year to a regional or come up to Seattle. We'll be in Seattle for the international. But these students have really embraced that company concept. I mean, they develop marketing materials. They develop business cards. When they deliver their oral presentations, they come in suits and ties and really professional. And they have company names and taglines. It's really amazing how they've completely embraced that sort of company entrepreneurial focus that the competition offers.
In what ways are they using marketing materials, and when do they need to give the presentation?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So the marketing materials, some, they'll do this before the event. Some will have websites. They'll get brochures together. They'll print out business cards. At the competition itself, they have to present a poster display. So it's basically, we say to them, think about if you were going to a conference or you were at some public venue where you had to explain to the layperson what this event was about, what this competition was about, and what your robot was about. How would you explain it so, you know, the general public, right, a layperson could understand, not using technical terms. So in that way, we're hoping that they can be advocates and promoters of, you know, science literacy, right? Technical literacy. So they really, again, we challenge them to create that marketing display. It's like, think of it, you know, you're traveling to a conference and you're going to have your exhibit booth. And how are you going to communicate? And again, not in technical terms, but really to the layperson, and keep it short and sweet. Because, you know, as people walk by, they're not going to spend a ton of time reading a ton of text. So how can you get that message across? And then the other thing at the competition itself is that's when they deliver their oral presentation. So we are so fortunate to have such great support from working professionals, from the ocean community, from the aerospace community, from the outer space community, you know, you name it. We've got individuals who volunteer with us every year. This competition is just part of their, you know, their annual plan, right? Their annual vacation in some cases. And we bring them together again. These are professionals from the workplace, right? And some of them have jobs that these students are aspiring to be in one day. So it's a great, that career piece, and that's another thing I should stress, the career piece for us and making sure the students see that it's not just this robot and this fun competition and that's it and they're, you know, that's the end of it. It can really lead to a career. And so trying to make those career connections. So the working professionals will be in there. The students will enter with their robot, and they'll present their product, if you will, their robot and all of its accessories, and they'll present their team and how they came together and what they learned to these judges who will evaluate. And there's a great question and answer period after these presentations where I've seen some great dialogues go on. It's really rewarding. And so the students, they'll deliver their presentations and present their marketing or poster displays at the event itself. And prior to the event, like I said, they'll be developing their marketing materials, and they actually have to, in advance, submit what we call technical documentation or a technical report. And that's really explaining what their vehicle is about, how they designed and built it. It's got to have a budget in there. It's got to talk a bit about their team. And again, those reports are evaluated by our wonderful core of judges, of volunteers who come from just, you know, technical professions.
As they create that vehicle, what are some of the challenges unique to creating an underwater robot that they're going to encounter, other than the obvious that it can't rust or anything?
Right. Well, yeah, working underwater is very different, much more challenging than working on land. They have to think about waterproofing. They've got to think about, you know, depending on the depth, the pressure. So it's really, you know, waterproofing can be a very big challenge, you know, something that you, when you put your electronics can together and think it's just great and nothing's leaking, and then you submerge it and suddenly see bubbles coming out of it, you know you have a problem. So again, waterproofing, dealing with the pressure, and then for, you know, our competitions, we even though it's in a pool, and technically if they looked over the side of the pool they could see their robot, we don't let them. We actually, in some cases, turn them around or prevent them from looking in. They can only use their video monitor to pilot their robot. So they really have to have, you know, good spatial awareness. And this is where, you know, moms and dads who are their kids are driving them crazy because they're playing all these video games, it actually comes in handy in this event. And so that's, again, another challenge, not knowing where your robot is and having to use the monitor, you know, a flat screen monitor to pilot. And so really that spatial awareness is very important.
What kind of time commitment are we talking about for these students from the time that their team signs up to the time the competition is over?
You know, that's a great question. So for us, with our competition season, you know, I think if you were asking a student team this question, they would say, we wish they would get next year's mission scenario out, like, right now. Right? But we need a few months to recover. And, you know, we run teacher workshops and other opportunities during the summer. So what we do is in September, we'll release what we call our mission briefing. And it's basically just, you know, a couple-page document that will talk about what the theme is. Every year our theme changes. We try to tailor the theme to something that is really going on in the world today, you know, a current event or something that is how ROVs, how underwater robots are being used either in science or technology. Or this year we did, you know, basically homeland security, right? Port security, port and harbor security. And so we'll release that. It'll talk about the theme. It'll just give bullet points about what the robot has to do. It'll remind them that they do have to do this other piece, which is the oral presentation, the technical documentation, and this poster or marketing display. Again, that comes out in September, and we also do a little preview mission. We really lay out one of the tasks in really great detail. And then in November, we'll release what we call our competition manuals, and that's the Bible, if you will, for our event. It'll have all the design and building specifications. It'll have details on the mission tasks. It'll include our prop or game piece, if you will, building instructions. A number of these teams will build those props. They're built the game pieces so they can practice on them. All that information will come out in November, and so they really have from November until April, May, and June. That's when our competitions take place. And so, you know, the international is the one that we had in Long Beach recently. That's the grand finale. But prior to that, in April and May, we have 30 regional contests that take place across the country and around the world. And so teams, they'll compete in those. The winners will advance to the international, and then the grand championship is in June.
I understand that with the teacher training, this might be over by the time I post the podcast, but what if a teacher is listening or a principal and says, I'd love to know about this for my school? How do they get more information?
You know what? They can visit our website, www.marinetech.org. And you're right. We just completed our, here in Monterey, we have a week-long, what we call Summer Institute. And we had teachers from all across the country, from upper elementary school through to university level, come in, and we take them through the process of designing and building an underwater robot with the idea that they go back and they implement this in their classroom and work with their students on this. And we hope to see them at the competition. Not everybody competes. There's a number of teachers that will work with their students, and they'll actually take their robots to do something in their community. We have a teacher in our local area who will take his students out to the local SLU, right, waterway, and they'll do water quality analysis. We've got teachers in Michigan who released salmon fry back into the lakes. And so it's really interesting. It's, you know, they'll go beyond the competition in some cases, in addition to participating, or sometimes they won't participate, but they'll still implement what they've learned in really cool ways. And so even though our workshop is over for the summer, our regional programs, again, I mentioned there's 30 across the country and around the world, those regionals will have teacher workshops, teacher and parent and student workshops. Those usually take place in the fall and into the early spring. So certainly visit our website, professional development, look for our summer institutes, look for regional workshops. If nothing else, you know, send me an email and I can get them connected and make sure that they know of upcoming workshops.
And where can they email you?
They can email me at jzandy, so that's J, Z as in zebra, A as in apple, N as in Nancy, D as in David, E as in Edward, at marinetech.org.
jzandy@marinetech.org. Jill, now I'm going to ask you for a story. I was going to ask about the first robotics competition, but I'm going to leave this up to you and just ask you to tell me one of your all-time favorite stories from the time that the competition started in 2002 right to now.
Oh, Mike. Well, when you asked about the first competition, it was really interesting, Dot, because that first event, we had a pilot regional in Monterey with some local schools. It was like a proof of concept, right? Could this work? How did it work? Would people be interested? And it was great success. And so that encouraged us to go ahead and have a full-on, you know, international competition. Now, that first one took place in 2002. It was called international because we had teams from Canada. So we felt that we could call it international. We had 22 teams, just 22 teams that year. And we had them from high schools up until community colleges and universities. And they all competed in the same class. At that point, we just had one competition class, if you will, one level. And yeah, it was just very interesting and challenging. You know, the first time you do anything, you of course learn a lot and you're exhausted. But to look back and to look over the years, you know, now in 2017, we had 710 teams from across the country and around the world. We are truly international at this point, registered to compete in either the international or one of the regionals that feed into it. And what's been really amazing to me is to see, you know, when we first started this event, again, we're funded by the National Science Foundation. The program at NSF that funds us is the Advanced Technological Education Program. They fund us now. They established the center. That really focuses on post-secondary education and community colleges being able to, you know, quickly spin up programs to help prepare the technical workforce. So when we created the competition, we created it with a community college audience in mind. And of course, high schools, right? You need these pathways to the community college. And then to see over the years, you know, I guess, as they say, what do they say? Build it and they will come. And they did. And back in 2008, 2009, we started looking at our breakdown of competition teams, and we noticed that the fastest growing population of teams were actually middle schools. And it wasn't like we were proactive. It wasn't like we had specific trainings for middle school students or teachers. But it was amazing. They, you know, found out about the event. They loved what it did. They loved how it impacted their students, and they came. And so we realized that, you know what, we could really do a service here, because middle school is where you tend to lose kids in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so we went back to the National Science Foundation, and we applied for and got an ITEST grant. That's Innovative Technology Experiences for Students and Teachers. And that's really focusing on K through 12. So it was a great complement to our existing grant in that it helped us really build that pathway through elementary school, middle school, high school, into post-secondary education and into the workforce. And so, you know, we started, and it's really been amazing because, you know, that enabled us to have resources where we could offer training. We could focus on the needs of middle school and high school audience.
And along the way, Jill and Mate Center problem solved one of the obstacles.
We realized, you know, for a lot of these teachers and students and parents, right, because you don't have, it doesn't have to be a school that competes. We have a lot of kids that organize themselves in their parents' garage, right? We realized that what was a real barrier to participation for many of them was access to materials, access to building materials, and just the knowledge of, you know, what's the best switch to use and what's the best motor. So we started to put together basic ROV kits, and we call them our CMATE ROV kits. And they are, you know, we've got, gosh, four now. We love the fishes here. We go from angelfish to pufferfish to triggerfish to barracuda. And basically what they do is, you know, we do research, we do R&D, we put, you know, the parts and pieces together. So we do all of that tough stuff. And then for teachers, especially, again, in the K through 12 community, it's a one-stop shop. They don't have to go out and get motors from one vendor and switches from another. They can just have their, you know, business office, their administration, work with just one vendor, and that's us, and they can get a kit of parts and pieces to help get them started. Now, we were anti-kitting for a number of years, Dot, because we thought, oh, that means everything's going to look the same, everything, you know, where's the innovation? But again, once we realized that access to materials was a real barrier, we wanted to remove that barrier. And what our kits don't do, they don't solve the competition problem. So they will provide you, you know, along with all of the curriculum and learning materials and videos, because our competition is really about student learning. It's not just about putting a kit of parts and pieces together. It's really about understanding the concepts and developing those skills and really understanding what it takes to put one of these together. Our kits don't give you the tools to solve the mission tasks. So if we, for example, ask you to go down and take a temperature of a hydrothermal vent, it doesn't tell you how to do that. It doesn't solve all those problems for you. So that's where we still are encouraging that innovation and creative thinking on the part of the students.
What have been some of the innovations they've come up with that have blown you away that you just didn't expect?
You know, there are so many. Every time we have these competitions, it's amazing what the students come up with in terms of, you know, from control systems to using an Oculus Rift to basically, you know, visualize, as I was saying earlier, you know, you have to look at this computer or this screen to pilot the vehicles. Well, this one of our teams came up with using the Oculus Rift headset to basically be in the environment. Total gaming person's way to go. There's been a number of students who have actually come up with just really creative uses for everyday materials. We've had a team that came up with its own printed circuit board that it now, you know, created their own company and they're selling them. It's, you know, just, again, some of the, I think the best innovations for me are when teams, you know, they just use creative everyday materials to come up with creative solutions to these things. You know, I mean, I think everybody always thinks like you need some complex manipulator arm or something that's really high tech to solve the mission tasks. And no, I mean, there's been some that have just used, you know, a kitty litter scooper, right, as a pickup tool. Who would have thought of that? And so I think that's probably one of the things that come out of it for me is that it doesn't have to be so high tech. Just the creativity, creative uses of everyday materials to solve these tasks is probably what's been amazing to me.
Jill says the support Mate Center has received has been crucial to their success.
We were established with funding from the National Science Foundation. We are continued to enjoy support from the National Science Foundation. We've got our partner, the Marine Technology Society, specifically their ROV committee that's made this, you know, robotics program possible. And then we've got a number of other organizations and individuals, I keep mentioning them, that have supported us over the years and allowed us to do what we do. I mean, we're a small staff here, and it's really been, you know, those organizations and individuals that have allowed us to just be successful and to be where we are. And, you know, we'll continue to, no matter where we go or what type of funding we have, we'll continue to, you know, just keep our mission of giving students opportunities to get involved with and develop science, technology, engineering, and math STEM skills, and to help connect them and showcase to them the career opportunities that are out there.
This is great. And I'm hearing that if people really would like to support you with a small donation, perhaps they could do that.
Yes, absolutely. We would definitely welcome that.
Now, what if you're a student, teacher, or parent who'd like to know more about getting involved in a future Mate Center ROV competition? What were some of the tasks that the robots had to do in the international competition this year to give people an idea of what they might be asked to do in the future?
That's a great question. So this year, our theme, we focused, because we're in Long Beach, we focused on the Port of Long Beach. And our theme was Port Cities of the Future, Commerce, Entertainment, Health, and Safety. So really looking at how are underwater technologies currently used to ensure the health and safe of our ports, our seaports, and how might they be used in the future? And so, you know, one of the things that we did under our commerce, so there was commerce, entertainment, health, and safety, and each one of those four items, there were tasks that were associated with each. So for commerce, you know, if anybody wants to Google Hyperloop, and even Elon Musk, who's made some comments about a Hyperloop system, and look at what they've done in some of the Scandinavian countries, building, you know, underwater tunnels to transport, you know, goods or even people from place to place, that's what our focus was. The whole idea was, okay, port cities of the future to help relieve congestion and to help keep, you know, safe passage and expedite the transportation of goods from a ship, a cargo hold, to port. There's this whole idea of this hyperloop system, this underwater tunnel that would go offshore where ships could basically drop their cargo and it would be transported in. So in our scenario, the ROVs were helping to build this underwater hyperloop system. And so they basically, it was underwater construction, which is a common task for ROVs to do. But again, in our scenario, it was about this future, this futuristic hyperloop. So that was the commerce. Entertainment, I have a 9-year-old, so we visit Disneyland quite a bit in California Adventure. So the entertainment part of this was all based on, or the inspiration for that, was based on the World of Color and their water and light show. And so in this scenario, in our future, you know, Port of Long Beach, there was a water and light show, and the ROVs had to go out and do some maintenance on some of the fountains. One of the fountains wasn't working, and so they had to go basically shut down the water and replace the fountain. And again, you know, use your imagination here, right? We weren't using real fountains. We weren't really building a huge hyperloop. It was all simulated in the Long Beach City College pool using the props that we build out of PVC pipe. One of my colleagues who does this calls himself the PVC artist because he always comes up with really great, great props made out of PVC, nothing, you know, high tech machined or anything like that. So again, that was the entertainment mission. And then the health mission, we were basically looking at, there was a Navy base that used to exist next to the port, and that was shut down years back, but there were some contaminants that ended up in the water and in the sediments where that Navy base used to be. And so they've done a lot of remediation on it, but in our scenario, basically we asked the robots to go out and make sure to see if the sediment was still contaminated, to take a sample, basically return to the surface and make sure that the sediment was still in good shape. And they had to sample some critters down there to, again, bring the critters back and test them out to lab to make sure that, you know, they were healthy. And finally, safety, you know, the cargo, the number of container ships that go in and out, you know, there's been instances where cargo containers have fallen off ships. And in our scenario, 4 containers fell off of a cargo ship, and it was in the middle of the night. No one really saw where they ended up. So in our scenario, the robots had to go out, had to go down, locate the cargo containers, map the area, and then they had to basically assess what was in the containers to determine if it was hazardous material. And if it was hazardous material, they had to put a buoy marker on it to keep, you know, vessel traffic away from it. So those were the tasks. In a nutshell, right, there's a lot of more details involved in each of them, but in a nutshell, those were the tasks that we put out to the teams this year.
I'm getting it. This is as much fun to teach and coordinate as it is for your students to learn.
I really believe so. And, you know, again, we change it up every year. Last year, we were, for the international competition, we were actually at NASA's Neutral Buoyancy Lab in Houston, Texas, a 6.2 million gallon pool where the astronauts train for their spacewalks. And so last year, we actually had a combination of an ocean and space mission. You know, the students were to build robots to go into the Gulf of Mexico and do some work there, but also to go to outer space and go to Jupiter's moon Europa, which underneath its icy surface has, you know, water and supposedly an ocean that lies beneath. And so that was really interesting because we, you know, in doing that, encouraged the students to learn more about Europa and learn more about the ocean that may be there and learn about our, you know, upcoming missions to Europa where we can learn more, hopefully learn more about what's underneath that ice sheet. And next year, the international competition will be in Seattle, actually outside of Seattle in Federal Way, which is a little bit south of SeaTac Airport. And we're still coming up with a theme. You know, they've got a great offshore cabled observatory there. They've also got some other things. You know, Boeing is there. We may do something really creative. So we're still working on next year's theme. But I think what I'd like to think is encourages students to learn more about all of these topics.
Do you know the dates yet for next year's international?
I do. Next year's international competition will be June 21st through the 23rd.
Something definitely to mark the calendar for. What have been some of the good mistakes, I mean good mistakes in terms of ones that you learn from, that you might warn students and teams entering not to make when they get into the underwater robotics competition?
That's a great question. Well, I'm sort of channeling a number of our volunteers who are, you know, basically just pioneers in ocean science and technology. And one of the mistakes is to be too complex. I mentioned, you know, the creative uses of everyday materials. And I know this is the KISS principle. We say keep it simple, students, and just not to over-engineer and to really focus on what are we asking them to do? What's the challenge? Or if they're not coming to our competition, if they're doing something, you know, going to explore their local lake for, you know, a potential, I don't know, shipwreck that might be there, what's the mission? And really, everything that you do to put together that robot should keep that in mind. And not to go too complex, you know, it's a tendency everyone wants to do the coolest, most techie, geeked out solution, but to keep it simple, to remember that principle is one piece of advice. The other is to, as my colleague, and really, you know, Dot here at the Mate Center, we work with such wonderful people. Matt Gardner is my colleague. He's the PVC artist who, I'm channeling him because his number one piece of advice to the teams is to get a working robot and practice, practice, practice. Even though, you know, a lot of teams will say, hey, the information doesn't come out until November. We're sitting around waiting. You know you're going to need a robot that can go up and down, right and left. You know you're going to need, in most cases, a camera. So you can get the basic vehicle together and then just practice flying or piloting it and get those skills. And then as the competition manuals come out, you see what the specific challenges are. Then you can work on the tools, but practice, practice, practice. And yeah, and I think too for teachers, you know, we work with a lot of teachers and, you know, a number of people too who want to go back and start a regional program in their area. And again, that KISS principle, just to keep it simple, to, you know, not try to go all out and go completely overboard, you know, small steps, right? Slow and steady wins the race.
As an education professional, you're doing a lot of teaching of students and teachers, but what's a lesson that you've learned from that you value the most?
Oh, wow. That is a good question and a tough one, too. You know what? I think over the years, I mean, just looking at all of the people that we work with, and again, I mentioned we have some really wonderful, you know, volunteers that come every year and contribute, and one of them, the sort of pioneer that I mentioned earlier, Marty Klein, who's just amazing subsea, you know, professional ocean technology person. You know, I think for me, a lesson that I've learned is to be a good listener, you know, to take all of these great people who have great advice and great lessons learned and really have the best interests of the program in mind, to be a good listener and to take all of that in. And also to be really patient with myself and with the teams and with people just getting started and for people just trying to, you know, navigate the competition scenarios and navigate the registration system. So I think that's probably, yeah. And two, you know, I mentioned my 9-year-old, to take good time for family, right? To work. We all get so focused in our work, and especially I know with the teams, they can get really focused on designing their, building their robot, especially as it gets closer to competition. But really to take the time to enjoy, right? Enjoy the process, enjoy your family and friends, and not get too overwhelmed and overworked in the process.
I see a nonprofit here that looks like it's new for MATE, and I don't see any information about it. What is MATE Inspiration for Innovation?
Thank you for asking, Dot. That is, yeah, and I will, if we were talking 3 months from now, you would definitely see a splashier page and more information about that. But you're right. That is our new nonprofit organization that was created really to support the competition. You know, I mentioned we're funded by the National Science Foundation. You know, we're very fortunate to have grants that have supported us over the years. But, you know, those grants might not always come. So we're really trying to set up an organization that can really reach out to other potential funders, potential organizations that would support the kind of work that we do. And so, yeah, MATE Inspiration for Innovation, we have our nonprofit status just this past spring. And so stay tuned because we've got some good plans for that. We'll launch and really promote what it is and what we're doing and certainly try to get out there and, you know, thinking like a business, thinking like we encourage the teams to do, to diversify our revenue streams, right? And not just grants, but try to bring in other funds to just keep this program going.
When people want to support you, can they find out more about that through the website that we gave before, themarinetech.org?
They can. They can. And they can always email me. Like I said, thank you for noticing about that nonprofit. I was just having a discussion the other day with my colleagues that now that the competition is over for this year, the season's over, and now that we've completed our week-long teacher workshops, that it's really time, you know, come early fall to do a really big launch, right? A really big kickoff and really promote that this organization exists.
I'll look forward to seeing more about that and promoting it on my website.
Thank you, Dot. We'd appreciate that.
And finally, Jill, if people could only get one thing from you about innovation, creativity, or making a difference, we're talking about your students, your daughter, anybody else that works with the underwater robotics competition, what would you want them to take away from what you have to teach?
You know what? I think what's been so rewarding, and I may go off here and give you a different answer, what's been most rewarding for me in running this competition and seeing it grow over the years is just the amount of interest from students and teachers and parents and the amount of support that we've gotten from the community, from the ocean space, from the technical community, all of the volunteers, the people that really rallied to support this. It's just really encouraging and really rewarding. And I think, you know, another piece, and this might be more along the lines of a good answer to that question, good quote-unquote answer, is, you know, I've always been somebody who, you know, I get discouraged, everybody does, but just to keep pushing, just to keep asking, to never give up, right? To think through solutions, to think through, to be tenacious, to have grit. You know, we hear that a lot in education these days. Students with grit are very successful. And I would just, you know, encourage people to, yeah, be tenacious and pursue their dreams and their goals. And if it doesn't seem like it's going the way they want, take a breather, take a step, and it may be a circuitous route, but to keep at it, and I believe you'll eventually get there.
Jill, thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. That was really, I really enjoyed speaking with you, and thank you for including us and for showcasing the competition. I mean, I say it every year, it's really amazing what these students come up with. And, you know, at the award ceremony, I always try to come up with something, you know, inspirational or motivational to share with them. And really, I just have to look out at them and all that they've done and all that they've achieved by getting there to find that inspiration.
You and I have been listening to Jill Zandi, Associate Director of the Marine Advanced Technology Education Center and President of the new nonprofit, Mate Inspiration for Innovation. You'll find more information on Mate's programs, including their upcoming 2018 Underwater Robotics Competition at marinetech.org. That's marinetech.org. And as Jill says, if you have any questions, you're welcome to email her about the professional workshops or the competitions at jzandi@marinetech.org. That's jzandi, Z like zebra, A-N-D-E, @marinetech.org. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Over Coffee at 2mavericks.com. That's 2, T-W-O, Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-X, 2mavericks.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.